All right, it's on.
Hi, Jonathan. I'll turn
on. How you doing, Luke?
Good.
All right. So, where are you from, Luke?
I'm from Salinas, California.
Salinas.
The lettuce capital of the world and the home of John Steinbeck.
Right, and it also shows up in a lot of...
Yes.
The beat novels and everything.
Yeah, and also in me and Bobby McGee, they mentioned New Orleans and Salinas in the same song. There might be more songs like that, but that's the only one I know.
Did that give you a feeling that it was an important place?
I didn't notice until after I lived here for a while, actually, that those songs. But yeah, it made me feel good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So, and how long were you up in that area?
Salinas? 1970 when I was born till 1990 when I left.
And you've been here since 1990?
No, then I went to Santa Cruz.
Okay.
I went to UCSC for my last 2 years of college. I've been at City College in Monterey before that. I lived in Monterey for a minute, too,
uh-huh.
Which is right by Salinas. I actually grew up between Salinas and Monterey on Highway 68. But, yeah, I lived in Monterey from 88 till 90, and then moved to Santa Cruz, and I guess 90, 91, around there. Went to school there for 2 years. Then I went up to Alaska after I finished school. I worked up there for about 6 months. Came back to Santa Cruz for a minute, and then went on a road trip and ended up here.
Did you have a motivation to be in school, or was it just part of it?
Well, to get away from home, I guess, and it was a way to get away. And I wanted to be I was interested in being a creative writing major and studying writing, so that's what I ended up doing.
Did they give you a lot of tools for that over at school?
Yeah, it was a good, as far as the program, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good program.
It was a good experience.
Yeah, the guy that headed up the program was this guy, Ron Hansen. He wrote the assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford, which just turned into a movie not that long ago.
Uh-huh.
A really cool writer, cool guy. Kind of a hardcore Catholic, but an excellent fiction writer.
Uh-huh. And
he's a good teacher.
Kind of a hardcore Catholic, but a good fiction writer.
Yeah. Yeah, that works, huh?
What did you go to Alaska for?
To pay off some student loans, for one thing. But I went up there and I got a job working in a cannery up in Naknek, a salmon cannery for Trident Seafoods. And then they moved me over to Ketchikan after that. The salmon season ended in the end of August, I guess. And then I hired onto a logging company, Gildersleeve Logging. And I went to Prince of Wales Island for that and did that for another 3 months, I guess. Came back home in November.
You know, it's funny because it brings back a lot of memories. I lived in Santa Cruz for a while.
Yeah,
there were
yeah.
all these people running up to Alaska to
right,
go to
yeah.
the cannery thing. I had a lot of close friends at the time that did that.
Right.
So it's funny.
It was cool work.
Uh-huh. It did remind you of John Steinbeck type stuff.
I never connected the cannery road to the cannery. Okay, in the cannery. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I guess that might have been part of it. You know, I'm sure that was in there. Yeah.
So, and then what brought you down to New Orleans?
Sorry, trying not to blow smoke in your face.
It's all
right. It wasn't my intention to come here necessarily. I just bought a car and wanted to just kind of go off and explore a little bit, which I had done before in like 1989. I did the same thing where I drove around the country for a while. And I decided to do that again. And I thought I was going to go to like maybe Santa Fe or something like that. And instead I just kind of stayed on the I-10 and just kept on going until I came here. I'd been here once before when I was like 19 on another trip by myself. Thought it was a beautiful city, but I came here and I didn't really know anybody. But I found a job pretty fast. I actually lived in Kenner when I first moved here.
Oh, really?
And worked for my landlord doing like renovations of houses and stuff. And then a friend of mine from UC Santa Cruz who had lived here, he ended up moving into New Orleans and we got a place together on Racing Magazine. And then I gradually moved down to the Bywater after that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's funny, but it is again remarkable because I feel like it's like I was doing the same thing as you at the same time as you. It's really kind of an odd thing to hear. What made you stay in New Orleans if you were doing that much more?
Well, the rent was cheap and the bars didn't close.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much it. And also I felt like there were like a lot of like-minded, unpretentious people, and it was beautiful. I could just I had a bike I could ride around. There were beautiful women who wanted to sleep with me, and
it was great before cell phones.
Yeah, it was.
I was trying to explain this to somebody before, when you actually had to go to some place to hang around to wait for something.
Yeah, man. It was bait fishing instead of lure fishing.
Yeah, like now, yeah. It's less entertaining. You had to wait for get the payphone.
Right. It was great. And then the first summer came. I moved here in the winter. The first summer came when I had no idea that it could possibly ever be that hot or that humid, and I had no idea. And the place I was staying at didn't have AC. I had to like fill the bathtub up with cold water and just lay in it.
Yeah.
And then got the power shut off a couple times because I was being a bum. I had a funny thing during that time. I'd kind of gotten out of touch with my parents, with my family. You know, being a bad son. It's like 23, and hadn't had any contact with them for a while. Wasn't really working, wasn't taking very good care of myself. And one day there was a knock at my door, and this was down on Independence Street. And there was a big, like, middle-aged black NOPD sergeant, and he says, "Are you Luke Allen?" And I said, "Yes, sir, I am." And he said, "Call your mama." And then just gave me this look of like utter fucking disgust. And I said, "Yes, sir." And then that was it. And I called my mom. My mom loves that shit. So apparently she had just, and this was like 94, which was the year we beat out DC for murder capital.
Right, I remember.
So how she convinced this man to like come looking for my ass, and how he found me too, I don't even know.
This is when the signs with the murder count used to go up every day outside the Abbey.
There were betting pools and shit. Yeah, for the final number. Yeah,
phenomenal. I wonder if it's moving towards God. That again. I don't know. Yeah, it's getting pretty hairy around here again. What was your interest in music in your life before that? Before you moved to New Orleans, tell me about your music goals.
Okay. My older sisters were 10 and 7 years older than me.
Uh-huh.
So I was born in 70. Sylvia was born in 1960. Don was born in 63.
Wow.
So I grew up with my parents playing classical music. Uh-huh. And also going to church, Episcopal church, and standing between my parents during the singing parts, and my dad singing really loudly and my mom singing flat.
Wow.
Between them,
yeah, and you could really perceive that you were perceiving the
it was horrible. It was pretty horrible. Is what it was. Yeah.
Wow.
And then my parents like listened to classical. Like we listened to classical music during dinner and stuff. And then, but my sisters were into like you know Neil Young and Bob Dylan and you know Cat Stevens, Simon and Garfunkel. Stuff like that, and that's my earliest memory is my parents being out of town, and my sister's having a party, and me being like curled up by the speaker and the boxer being played, and that la la la,
yeah,
la,
yeah.
La, la 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 la, and
did you like it?
I loved it. Yeah, it was like totally was just I was just like stunned and just like in love with that, and then piano lessons. We had my grandmother's piano in our house that no one really played. I think everyone went through the piano lessons, including myself. I didn't really take to it that much, but I learned basic piano stuff. And then when I was a little older, trumpet lessons.
Oh, wow.
Played trumpet in school band. Up to my freshman year in high school, I played trumpet in the marching band. In Salinas High.
Yeah.
Then I ended up going to a different high school in Monterey, and I stopped playing music at that point, pretty much. But also around this time, my sister Sylvia gave me her nylon string classical guitar, and by like the time I was like 15 or 16, I started like learning one chord at a time, you know, and started playing a little bit. Played in a high school band, like a little rock band, kind of, where I just sang.
Were you singing your own songs?
No, I was singing my own songs. I was writing the lyrics. Someone else would be writing the music for the most part.
So you were already writing songs?
I was already.
How old were you?
At that point, 15. But I had written songs when I was way younger than that. I'd make up songs and sing them and walk around the woods and like sing them to myself. And the first like song I wrote as far as music and words, I got chicken pox when I was 18 or something, 17. When I actually wrote the music and the words to it. But I had Xanax for the chicken pox to keep me from scratching. And so it was like a Xanax fever high kind of mixed together.
Yeah.
And that was my first song, yeah.
Right, good song. So
yeah, it was the first one that was like pretty decent, yeah.
Xanax and chicken pox.
Yeah. It's a good combination, yeah.
Xanax and chicken pox. It goes to show you don't really need LSD and heroin.
No, you don't. Yeah. That shit was great. Makes you ugly, but yeah.
What were those songs about? What were you writing about?
Well, that song was about, it was called Drifting. I don't remember. The only lyric I remember, it was like a guy like, I guess it was pretty much a fever song, but about some girl that I was imagining. I don't even think there was a specific girl. The one line I thought that was good was, could you meet me at the bottom and gently break my fall? It was a guy, like sort of a suicidal falling down kind of song, you know.
So it was always these dark themes. So.
Yeah, even then, yeah, it was.
What do you think brought you to that?
I was a pretty unhappy fucking kid.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't have like a bad childhood or anything, but I was always a pretty melancholy person.
I mean, it's interesting because you seem really very well-balanced and adjusted.
That's what Megan always says too, man. Yeah.
And yeah. Actually, the whole time, knowing you and I met you a number of years ago,
yeah.
You always seemed kind of balanced.
I think I... Back then, I don't know if I don't know. My mom always says I was a really happy baby. And she almost says that as a condemnation. She's like, you were such a happy baby.
Wow, interesting.
I think at one point in my life, I decided to start, like, learning how to behave socially a little bit better and that it'd make me happier, you know, like to engage people around me more. But I was a lot more shy when I was younger.
Uh-huh.
Really shy, really unhappy.
When do you think you made the decision to switch your major?
When I was 20. Yeah.
20. So you already, that was when you were in community college at that point?
Yeah. Though? Yeah. Uh-huh.
Was there particular anything that...
Yeah, there was, yeah. I don't know if I want to talk about that.
Okay, all right. That's okay. You don't have to.
I mean, I would, but I had a suicide attempt is what happened.
Oh, okay.
To be honest with you. That I lived through, and it was after that that I had this like sort of like almost like chemical shift in me that made me decide that I have to start living differently in order to be around other people.
Uh-huh.
And sort of a fake it till you make it kind of thing with being a gregarious social person, because no one likes a fucking mopey wet rag motherfucker, you know, and I wanted to get laid and I wanted to have friends.
Yeah.
And I was accomplishing neither of those things, living the way I was, and I was a really, really sensitive, miserable little shit. So
how did that affect your songwriting?
Well, I'll tell you what, that song Legalized Suicide,
yeah.
A couple of the lines from that's from the actual note I wrote.
Oh, really? So that's very close to home.
Yeah. And the song's become this sort of like farce in a way. It's become farcical over time.
Yeah.
But when I wrote it, but even though I thought it was funny when I wrote the line, it was like, you know, man, I don't know. Yeah.
Have you had an outlet the whole time over this whole period? I mean, since you were said when you were an early teenager, you were singing songs.
I was writing stories.
Writing stories. Have you had an outlet for doing that with people or in front of people all for the whole stretch since then?
No. I wasn't playing in front of people till much later.
Uh-huh.
No.
Okay. Let me ask another question. Most of us, and I'm going to get to a question more about what the thing is, but I don't know much about you before the Happy Talk Band show.
Okay. All right.
So... Okay, so what were you up to with music around here before that happened?
I played in bands in Santa Cruz.
Uh-huh.
In college. I played in a punk band in college. And then in 1995, then I moved here. I played a couple open mics here and there at Hi Ho. They used to do open mics way back. Well, actually, wait, was that then? No. I didn't play out at all when I moved here the first time. So 93 to 95, I wasn't playing out in New Orleans. But 91 to 93, I was in a band in Santa Cruz. Then in 95, I moved back to Santa Cruz. I went back to California for my sister's wedding, but I went back and I broke up with the girl I'd been seeing. And I was just broke as shit. So when I got back to California for my sister's wedding, I really didn't have that much money to get back or a job set up. So I went up back to Santa Cruz, where a lot of my friends still were, doing bad drugs, which I started doing too, but playing music as well. And so I got in a band there, and we played at a band for a couple of years with them too.
And so you were playing out in Santa Cruz?
Yeah. At that point. Very few clubs, mostly just like parties, like college parties, stuff like that.
Interesting. When did you move back here?
97.
97. And how did it work with playing out in New Orleans at that point?
At that point, I started playing open mics. That was Hi-Ho. This guy, Chet, who now owns the, the thrift store right down the street. We're right over there. You know, we're right over there.
Yeah. He really owns that?
Yeah.
Interesting. I didn't.
Yeah, Chet. Yeah. But he ran an open mic there at the Hi-Ho for a while. So I started playing that. And then I was doing like poetry reading kind of things and playing my own little songs. I've been writing songs all this time. And then, there was a kind of a thing at Dragon's Den one night where I was playing by myself. It was a funny night, but Bailey was there for my band, Bailey Smith, and he saw me play, and we knew each other a little bit, and I had taken a Valium, and I had a bunch of tequila, and the mic kept on shocking me, so I kept saying shit between every phrase, and after that he said he wanted to start a band with me. I'd already been playing a little bit of music with Andy Harris, my original drummer. He had done a couple shows with me over at Dragon's Den. Not Dragon's Den, over at Hi-Ho. And basically I got the three of them, and then we found a bass player, Alan LaFleur, who now plays in Lost by Your Ramblers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so it was the four of us, and that's how Happy Talk got started.
And that was, you already called it Happy Talk at that point?
Well, we didn't call it anything. We were going over names, and then Daniel Johnson, I don't know if you know who he is, he's this kind of like a idiot savant Austin songwriter who played a show over at El Matador and did a cover of Happy Talk, the song Happy Talk.
Is that the song you write?
What's that?
That song you wrote?
No. Happy Talk's from South Pacific.
From South Pacific.
That's okay. It's from the musical South Pacific. Happy Talk. It's like a jazz standard. It's become sort of a jazz standard too, somewhat. Good. That's why Homeboy's record is called Happy Talk.
Okay.
Yeah. But they heard that cover, and they thought how funny it would be to have all these depressing songs and have a band called Happy Talk.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. So the irony started up right away.
Yeah.